Dive into the Americas today with hosts Carl Meacham and Robert Funk for insights on U.S. Latin America relations and inter-American dynamics you won't find anywhere else.
So in the second session of our trilogy with Maria Corina Machado, we tackle two crucial issues that define the present and future of Venezuela, the economy and the environment. In a country where almost 82% of the population lives in poverty and more than half in extreme poverty, decades of poor government management and corruption have led to a dangerous dependence on oil, severely limiting economic development. Against this backdrop, we will discuss how to diversify the Venezuelan productive sector and the role PDVSA should play in a sustainable future. Additionally, we will explore the alarming environmental situation exacerbated by the extractivist model, including oil production and illegal mining, and its impact on Venezuelan biodiversity and indigenous communities. With Maduro's regime rejecting initiatives like the Escazú Agreement, we will talk about the environmental challenges the country faces and possible solutions. So join us in this essential conversation with Maria Corina Machado, where we seek answers and proposals for these challenges that are so critical to the future of Venezuela. So Maria Corina, let me go right into it. So considering the environment or the catastrophe that we're seeing generated by sort of this model of extraction, including oil production and illegal mining in the Orinoco Basin, what do you think are the main environmental challenges Venezuela faces? And shouldn't these be talked about in the presidential debate?
Absolutely, absolutely, because Venezuela could be, on the other hand, the greatest ally in terms of sustainable development. And today, it is an ecological tragedy what we're seeing in our country. But let me just say a couple of things. 25 years ago, Venezuela was seen as a country that was growing, one of the most energetic economies of the region. Today, we are the poorest country in the hemisphere. I mean, pensions are less than $5 a month. A teacher earns a dollar a day. We have over 80% of our population living in poverty. Almost 80% of our economy has been destroyed. Destroyed. Imagine what it means. And certainly that has consequences, not only as a humanitarian catastrophe and migration as a consequence, but certainly also in the environmental side as well. We've seen over 1,200 hectares of pristine rainforest, as I said, hectares of Venezuelan southern territory destroyed by illegal mining. And the kind of extraction that is being developed has done damage that is persistent. Then you see what's going on the northern side of Estado Monagas, where 1.5 billion cubic feet of gas is being burned daily, and this is three times the amount of the consumption of gas of the whole Colombian society as another country. So these are critical issues that if we don't stop, would have huge, bigger and bigger consequences, not only for Venezuela, but for the whole world.
And do you have an economic plan? Do you have sort of advisors? How do you see, obviously the challenge would be huge once you actually have the opportunity to implement change. What's the plan?
Yeah, because Carl mentioned that before. Well, first of all, in order to stop that, we need to put order in Venezuelan finances. And right now, Venezuela is a black box. We don't know what is the true amount of our reserves, of our debt, of the income, even in the oil industry. We used to produce almost 4 million barrels a day. No. Today is around 700. And this is not going to grow unless we put order. We restate the rule of order, the rule of law. I want to insist on this point, Robert, because it has to do with all the other issues we mentioned before. Yeah. Venezuela is in the last place of rule of order in the Global Justice Project Index out of 140 countries in the world. In the last place. Imagine what this means. I mean, there's no law, no respect for rules and for private property. So first of all, we need to put order in our finance, and we need to go to a process where we'll restructure all our debts in a legal and organized and transparent manner in order to be able to reinstate our country in the financial world system and bring huge investments for extraordinary opportunities in oil and gas, in energy, in mining, ordered mining, in tourism, and so on, telecommunications and so on. We can turn Venezuela in a couple of years in the energy hub of the Americas. There is no other country that can match its oil, for example, with the U.S. refinery system than Venezuela. But that can only happen if you have, you know, respect for private property, for contracts, open markets, so that these huge investments can come and turn into sustainable development and certainly employment and social services.
So let me drill down a little bit on that. So Chavez fired 21,000 PDVSA employees in 2002, and PDVSA's current state is dismal. How crucial do you think that Citgo and PDVSA's relationship, I guess, will be for Venezuela's sort of for digging it out of the current situation that they're in, for the future of Venezuela? How important is getting that right?
Well, first of all, Venezuela, PDVSA was destroyed by corruption and illegal activity, starting with when Chavez, as you say, took hold of it. Even though it was a state company, it used to be autonomous, and there was meritocracy, which meant that you had an efficient and transparent operation. Chavez took hold of it because he wanted the income of PDVSA for political control. So we destroyed the company. And today, Venezuela, PDVSA has no opportunity whatsoever to recover in what it was gone. So we have reserves for hundreds and hundreds of years, oil reserves, I mean. But we know that the window of opportunity for oil and gas is limited. Gas is a transition element of for energy. So the only way we can, you know, take profit of the resources we have and transform them in welfare and well-being for our people and helping the international huge global energy crisis is through private investment, but at the same time, complying with all ecological, ambiental regulations that should be put in place. Many of them are part of our law, but you know what happens with the Venezuelan law right away. Mm-hmm. So these are the kinds of obvious actions that Venezuelan people today realize and accept. You know, talking about privatizing public companies in the past was like, you know, a scene. You know, people would say I was totally nuts to talk about open markets and competitions in areas in which the state had total control in the past. On the contrary, now when I talk about competition, promoting investment in more than 900 state-owned companies that are all broken, that are, you know, black boxes, and bringing investment competition into it is something that really gets enthusiasm in our people. But I also would like to reach out to all those sectors around the world, and especially in the energy sector, to see the huge potential Venezuela has in a process of nearshoring that has been growing and will be growing in the years to come, regardless of who is, you know, the next president of the United States. Venezuela ought to be a huge ally in this and other sectors.
You mentioned the mineral resources, the richness, oil, gas, minerals, and so on. That certainly played a role, one would imagine, in what the government is doing in Essequibo and the border with Guyana. How do you see that? How much of a problem is it for going forward, given that, you know, there's every likelihood that this will be something that will be used politically to kind of shore up support and also to maybe possibly grab more resources?
Well, this is one of the issues that, Robert, we have to talk super seriously, because first of all, Venezuela's historical rights on the Essequibo is well known, and I believe if it's well defended, it will be respected. But unfortunately, Maduro, first Chavez and then Maduro, decided to use it as a political tool, first to gain support of the Caribbean countries, and now trying to exacerbate a nationalist feeling. But it has turned out against them. On one hand, it has, because talking about a possible, you know, bellic escalate, right, is something that has brought huge rejection from an international perspective, and Maduro has been totally isolated on that strategy. But also internally, they tried to use this, and you can recall on December the 3rd last year, they called for a referendum around the Essequibo conflict, and the turnout was very, very poor, even though they tried to blame and threat people if they did not participate. So I do not think this is a good idea that Maduro should follow up. And I, as a Venezuelan, I need to press the regime to comply with the International Court of Justice deadline, which is in April 8th, for them to present the counter-memoir. On the contrary, we will be in a very weak position to defend our rights in Essequibo.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that you believe that Maduro needs to sign the Escazú Agreement, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, we reached this point because of the mistakes that Chavez and Maduro did. And now it is being discussed at the International Court of Justice, and it is at this instance that we have to defend ourselves. Everything else is Maduro using El Essequibo as a tool of threat and provocation against, you know, the decision and the constitutional depth for an electoral process is here. Everything else, I mean, he's the one to blame. And we cannot fall into that trap. But as I said before, I don't think he will follow this route, because it's been a boomerang for him, locally and internationally.
Yeah. Robert, let me just interject here just very quickly, because I think, you know, there's a situation with the Arco Minero del Orinoco and the role that non-state transnational actors like the FARC and FARC dissidents and the ELN are playing in the development of illegal mining in the south of Venezuela is playing. Obviously, there are security issues there. I just wanted to get your view, Maria Corina, of how severe a problem do you think this is, and if you think that the current government is trying to address any of this, and if this would be something that you would address in a different way? How do you see that?
Absolutely. That's one of the critical issues we have to address immediately, because it has, let's say, humanitarian consequences, environmental consequences, and economic consequences. And certainly there's an issue of sovereignty. As I said before, over 60% of Venezuelan territory is under control of criminal groups. Many of them are foreign groups. And all this area of the Orinoco Basin is penetrated by groups that come from different nationalities that have illegal mineral activities, but now they have the Colombian guerrilla, the ELN, actively involved, assuring that these activities are growing, producing the biggest environmental crime in Venezuelan history, but also through illegal mining, but also displacing indigenous groups and Venezuelans that used to work for decades in the sector. Private companies that have done mining for many years that comply with requirements were displaced, and that's part of another issue we have in terms of the penalties we will have to pay for ignoring the rights of transnational companies that were doing mining in these areas. We certainly have a plan for this, for taking control of all the southern part of our territories below the Orinoco River, many of them involve taking care of indigenous groups, because they are totally abandoned, but also yep. to put order, because I do think certain areas should be totally banned from mining, and there are others where we can handle mining, but with very high standards, as is it done around the world, in countries where you have respect for, you know, the integration of economic activities in mining and respect for the environment. And we've been working with many NGOs and groups that are involved in the field, but I have to say that they have been severely persecuted because the regime doesn't want the world to know the degree of damage and so in some cases, irreversible damage that it's been done to the environment because of their involvement. And the regime is absolutely involved. I want to say this. I mean, they are partners of these activities, and that's why they don't want it to be known globally.
Well, I think our time is up for this second block, and it's very clear. You know, as someone who knows Chile, we know that a democratic transition involves also an economic transition and a leap towards development. That's going to be a great challenge given all the conditions that you've just mentioned. And also it's going to be a challenge to if we talk about PDVSA, to reattract just the human capital that Venezuela has lost. And I think that's what we're going to talk about in our next session. So thank you so much again, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Americas Today. In our next episode, we'll be back with Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado to discuss the Venezuelan diaspora abroad. For now, we're signing off, and we wish you a great day.